Good morning, everyone. Or is it good afternoon? It's still morning. I just wish it was afternoon and I don't have to present, but it's okay. What we're going to talk about actually points to some of the things that have been talked about earlier. This one is about reproductive health education in terminating the STI-HIV transmitting chain in resource-poor settings. Now, we're talking about resource-poor settings. And as we know, resource-poor settings are distributed all over the world, regardless of whether you're in the first world, or in the third world, or in the second world, or in the 15th world. There are resource-poor settings everywhere. I wish to acknowledge everyone on the list, Dr. Azevedo, Dr. Ekundayo, Dr. Buckner-Brown, Dr. Allah, Dr. Prater, and all the people who worked with us in dealing, in looking at this issue, as well as MacroOrc, who provided us with the information to work with. We are going to be talking about what do we do with this issue of action after decision making. As you know, a lot of the theoretical models have been based on cognitive and perceptual relationships. And after that, you make your decision. You are still in cognitive and perceptual systems. Now you actually take action. That's another, there's a big gap there, and that's where our research looked at. I have no relationships with anyone in APHA. But if they have money, I'll be glad to have some. Africa bears the world's heaviest burden of HIV/AIDS. Distribution and transmission patterns vary very widely across the continent. In some places, it's the lowest in the world. In some places, it's the highest in the world. But Africa actually bears the heaviest burden because out of about 33 million people who live with AIDS or suffer from AIDS in the world, Africa has about 20 million of them. They need to seek more affordable ways to combat the disease because in Africa, Africa is a very resource-poor setting. But as I said before, there are resource-poor settings in all 8 parts of the world. And it's transmitted predominantly in Africa through heterosexual sexual activity. The interpersonal communication is an issue. We know that the two greatest obstacles to interpersonal communication are stigma and confidentiality. What we are trying to find out is whether we can get around this, have communication that will tend towards, Dr. Okumabo has said, adaptive or maladaptive behavior. And this presentation distinguishes between two forms of behavior that may enhance partner notification. That means we're talking about people now being able to communicate with each other, partners being able to communicate with each other, meaning then they've gone beyond self-efficacy, beyond cognition and perceptual issues. I've talked about this. Our purpose is to examine specifics of behavior differentiation between speech behavior and action behavior, especially as it relates to sexually transmitted diseases. And we also look at the implications for personal action, which is behavior, for terminating the transmission chain, for prevention education, and for prevention policy. In the West African country of Guinea, our questions were whether knowledge of infection would influence partner notification, or whether family marital structure would influence it. Now, the reason that we selected that was because we recognized that Guinea is about 82% Muslim, and in the Muslim religion, it is religiously legal to be polygynous. That means a man having up to 4 wives. Now, the transmission patterns in this kind of setting would, the only thing that I can imagine in a monogynous setting is kind of like a multiple serial partners situation. But in that case, when one person has it, they can transmit it very quickly to others because it is a scheduled sexual activity environment. And so that's why we looked at it. But then Guinea happens to be 1.7% prevalence, meaning something is happening. They're one of the lowest in the world. They have all the risk factors, resource poor, polygenal settings, and all those kinds of things that could help really blow up the transmission. And family planning behavior, is that associated with partner notification? And this is the model that we developed. This one goes beyond cognition. We are trying to see if a related behavior would predict another kind of behavior that is related to it. And in this case, we were looking at family planning and sexually transmitted disease. We know that they are both based on sexual activity. One results in pregnancy, which is not stigma-laden. The other one results in STI, which the same thing results in, can result in STI, which is highly stigma-laden and confidentiality issue based. So we looked at these constructs, related behavior, knowledge. At least you have to know that you have an issue to be address it. Whether that person also has knowledge of the related behavior itself and the condition. What was the marital status? Is it polygynous? Is it monogynous? And how polygynous is it? Whether people discussed family planning amongst themselves as spouses, or whether they actually practiced family planning. It was a cross-sectional design, multi-level sampling approach by MacroOrc. Participants were selected by households, and families in households were selected. There were trained interviewers who collected data. The inclusion criteria were that the person would be female, would be of childbearing age, and they would have reported having had STI or HIV in the past 12 months before the interview. And we used the related behavior model and a mixed methods analysis. That's the approach that we used. We had a main data set of 6,753, which was representative of the Republic of Guinea. Guinea, incidentally, is a country of about 9 million people. Then we took a subset based on infection status, as I mentioned earlier, and that subset gave us about 461 sample size, which could give us some indication as to the prevalence among that group. Then we used systematic analysis to reduce the number of variables that we had there to 286. Then we got our pre-construct data, and then we performed factor analysis and alpha analysis. And we were able to come up with 21 variables, 21 items for all of the six constructs. Then we scored them, analysis using logistic regression to find out what the outcomes would be. I had mentioned about that. Our hypothesis was that women with high knowledge of family planning would be more likely to notify their partners. Women with high knowledge of STI, HIV would be more likely to notify their partners. Women with high scores in family marital structure, that means women who lived in polygynous environments as opposed to monogynous environments, would be less likely to inform because of stigma. And that women with high score in discussion of family planning would be more likely to inform. And women with high scores in family planning practices would be more likely to inform. I mentioned that. That's what we came up with. If we look at this, we'll see that the odds ratio reflected here shows that people who had been participants who had been informing, so who had been discussing family planning with their partners, were more likely to inform their partners of their STI HIV status when they knew it, so that they could begin to work with each other to address the issue. Also, we found out that women who were 35 to 39 years old were more likely to inform their partners than women who were 18 to 24 years old, meaning they had had some comfort level, developed some comfort level within the marital setting, and they had developed the communications system. If we look at knowledge of STI-HIV, which is the first one, KSH, you see that it's borderline significant. But it shows that knowledge of that condition could be useful. On the other hand, knowledge of family planning did not really make any significant difference. What we are trying to say with this is that it's one thing to have cognition and to have perception. It's also one thing to make a decision as to what to do. But when you are faced with stigma and when you are faced with confidentiality issues, then you are going to have to deal with those ones to even get to a point where your decision can translate into action. Now, when you can cut across, when you can cut through those barriers by communicating with one another, then you would have sidetracked stigma, because now you're talking with one another. You would have sidetracked the issue of confidentiality. You don't have to go through any intermediary. And then you both can take action to terminate the behavior, seek care and support, and seek guidance as to how to terminate the, how to control the infection. Now, the implication for personal action is that partners informed appropriately by spouses may be more inclined to engage in supportive behavior modification instead of the rejective, the maladaptive one. You have it, I don't have it, then I don't have to, you know, you're out of my life. This hypothesis needs to be tested in various populations. And there's help needed to design appropriately effective approaches to ensure better community communication between sexual partners. This means that in transmitting the transmission chain, you want to look at how supportive behavior modification processes may facilitate joint decision making on action, on further action that partners should take. Meaning, they know what the situation is, they both come together and discuss and make determinations, decide and take actions on what needs to be done to control the problem. This would help to prevent primary and secondary reinfection, transmission, terminating either the continuing or looping chain, or both. Looping chain meaning I infect you, I get treated, then you infect me back. That's a loop. For prevention education, there's a need to encourage people to notify their partners to talk about family planning. Talk about family planning all the time. Talk about STI all the time. Inform people in the settings, in treatment settings, in intervention settings, in any intervention, including from the pulpit. Let people discuss family planning with one another all the time. Because when the time comes and they have gonorrhea, they'll be more likely to talk about it too, because they are both based on sexual activity. And family planning is a very, very appropriate and non-threatening way to discuss this, because family planning is not a stigma laden. Also, there's a need to create a safe environment for that kind of communication between partners. And in terms of prevention education, there's a need for people to know what their symptomatologies would be, so that they can at least identify it and then seek screening, seek diagnosis from the more clinical environments. It should not be threat-driven. It should provide actionable knowledge for early identification, and it should enhance self-efficacy for action to seek and obtain support for solution. Because people would feel, we know when I have it, there's stigma and everything, I can't do that. The self-efficacy has to be like, what can I do now to deal with this? And I'll go ahead and do it. And we want to support confidentiality and trust and still get the communication across and eliminate or protect against stigma. In terms of policy, there's a need to examine current policy and identify gaps that may enhance transmission behavior instead of modifying it without breaking confidentiality and without triggering or intensifying stigma. Those are very, very important things. And then there's also a need to develop inclusive policy that enhances prevention, protects confidentiality, and prevents stigma. Also, we want to recommend that there's a need to design educational programs, and that there the generic messages with generic slogans that focus mainly on threat perceptions, as Dr. Okumagwa has said, may generate stigma and thus be counterproductive to partner notification. There is a need to design group-specific, culturally congruent educational programs that take into consideration the customs of communication among the groups. Sometimes I have the problem, you are my spouse, I'm afraid to tell you, but I can tell your best friend so that your best friend can help me tell you in a non-threatening environment in a way that you can be more receptive. In some settings, that works. In some test settings, that does not work. There's a need for us to recognize those kinds of approaches so that we can deal with this thing appropriately. And make education of and discussion of family planning and STI parts of the staple in intervention environments, and to develop culturally congruent and effective educational programs that also encourage men to be supportive of their spouses in discussing reproductive issues related to family planning and STI HIV prevention. As you know, it's a two-way road. It takes two, and the other side also needs to be ready to receive the information, to address whatever the outcomes may be. I want to say that this theoretical model needs to be tested in other populations. One. Two, what happens after they've notified their partners, we don't know. We need to know and find out whether, even though they've discussed family planning and they've notified their partners, did they lose the relationship? Did they lose status? Was there any stress that was developed in the relationship? Was there any maladaptive behavior? Or did it lead to adaptive behavior to address the problem? Thank you.
To our final speaker, I'd like to introduce Kevin Rowe.
Who is not Kathleen Rowe. I normally dress more professionally for presentations, but I didn't know I was doing this until yesterday, and I only brought enough clothes for this.